web services.
Welcome to the Cloudonaut podcast. We are your hosts, Andreas and
Michael Wittig. We have been building on AWS since 2009. In this podcast, you can follow along as we develop products like BucketDB, Marbot, and HyperEnv and learn from our practice. This is episode number 82, which we are recording on October the 11th in 2023. In case you're watching this live on YouTube or LinkedIn, feel free to ask your questions and we will make sure to answer them during the show. So, Andreas, let's jump into what we learned in the last 2 weeks. So what's on your list?
Yeah, Michael. So I've written about a thing that I learned when it comes to monitoring a Lambda function. So Lambda functions, like many other AWS services, they write CloudWatch metrics. And then we typically use CloudWatch alarms to monitor those metrics. So for Lambda, for example, we want to get notified if Lambda functions fail. So there's an error metric, and you want to monitor those kind of things. And we have a lot of Lambda functions. So some of our applications are serverless. For example, the backend for Marbot, our monitoring solution, is serverless. So there are many Lambda functions and many CloudWatch alarms monitoring those Lambda functions. But then a customer was reporting an issue and told us that a small part of our functionality was not working. So I started debugging and I found out that one of our Lambda functions was sometimes failing. So the invocation failed sometimes. But I wondered, because we did not receive any alerts. So the CloudWatch alarm was in status OK all the time. So we didn't get notified about this issue. And so I digged a little bit deeper and I found out about something that I've never heard before when reading through the documentation. And this is a Lambda function reports the metrics of an invocation with the start timestamp of the Lambda function invocation. But then a Lambda function can run up to 15 minutes. So if it, for example, fails after 14 minutes, it will still report the failure with the timestamp from the invocation start. And the problem that we had was that some of our CloudWatch alarms were only looking back 5 minutes. So the alarm was defined in a way, look back one evaluation period of 5 minutes. And so the problem was when the Lambda function failed, for example, anything basically above 5 minutes invocation time, then our CloudWatch alert was not triggering. And so this is what happened. So that means if you are using CloudWatch alarms to monitor Lambda functions, you should go and check the configuration and make sure that the CloudWatch evaluation period is larger than the Lambda function timeout that you configure. And you have to ensure that this is the case, because otherwise it's possible that you are missing some of the information in the metrics. So this is something that I learned. So I don't know, we have been monitoring those Lambda functions for years that way, but now I found that out and fixed all our CloudWatch alarms.
Yeah, Andreas, that's a good learning. So I wasn't aware of that as well. So we should definitely make sure to keep that in our mind when defining CloudWatch alarms for Lambda functions in the future, right?
Yeah. I've also written a blog post about that. I will put the links into the show notes. That helps. If you want to reread the details.
So if in 2 years I search for the problem, I will find the blog post probably.
Hopefully.
All right. So Andreas, I worked a little bit on our BucketDB product. So this is our antivirus for Amazon S3 product. And just a little bit of context to understand what I'm talking about now is that the way our customers install the product in their AWS accounts is via a CloudFormation template. So basically, AWS Marketplace has a capability to purchase products that are then delivered using CloudFormation. All right. And so far, we have maintained 6 YAML files for our product. So we have 2 engines, and for each engine, we offer 3 networking options. So it's 6 templates. So when we change something in the template, we usually have to copy it to 5 other templates. And I think, as anyone can agree, that's not an ideal solution. So we were aware of that. And as always, I mean, we have feature requests and we have like things to improve in our code base. So we prioritize feature requests over those internal optimizations. But then we finally decided that we should tackle that problem. So I was looking for ways to generate a CloudFormation template in a way that we can reuse parts of the templates, because there are parts that are different. So I told you that we have different networking options. So we have a public VPC, a private VPC, and also the option that the customer brings its own VPC. So those are different. But for example, the auto-scaling groups, the SQS queues, the CloudWatch alarms, and so they are in many cases the same. So it was important for us to reuse parts of the templates. So there are a couple of solutions, but I finally decided to use the AWS CDK. But not in the way that most people use it for. So what I wanted to do is this. I just want to generate the YAML templates. Nothing more, nothing less. And I also don't like magic. So I just want to have this functionality. Okay, turn this into a template. Nothing more. While doing this, I was running into one challenge. So how can I ensure that what I create with the CDK is an exact match of what of the old template? And to kind of ensure that, I wrote a little script, and I'll share the code to that in the chat, to basically compare 2 CloudFormation templates and diffing them, and it displays quite nicely the differences. So with this approach, I was kind of able to validate that what I do in CDK is actually an exact copy of the old template. And this was very helpful, and I catch a lot of issues that I was running into. So it was really, this proved a very important step in the migration. Okay, what else is important? There is no magic way to convert an existing YAML template into CDK code. So if you search for that problem, you will see that there was a kind of it was not like officially supported thing, but it was kind of an I would say like a proof of concept from AWS, but it doesn't work with the current version of the CDK. But besides that, there's nothing to do that for you. So it's basically manual copy and paste work with a lot of manual editing. It helps to kind of utilize some functionality of your editor to do that. So for example, when I copy the properties from the CloudFormation template into the CDK code, I basically have to convert Pascal case names of the properties into what CDK does, and this is camel case. So basically I have to change the first character from uppercase to lowercase in all the properties. And so this is one of the things where your editor can help you if it is able to do that. So I was using Sublime, and Sublime can do it for me. So that was really helpful. As I already mentioned, I'm not interested in magic and also not in CDK magic. So the reason why I don't like this is that I want to understand what's going on. And there are 2 options to do that. Either you can understand the magic, and then it's not magic anymore, but I'm not interested in kind of deep diving into the CDK. So I was just using stuff that is very straightforward. And in CDK, there are constructs, and there are different layers of abstractions. And the first layer, the layer 1, is basically a one-to-one representation of the CloudFormation resource itself. So it has exact the same properties, and it does nothing else than describing this single resource. If you use a L2 and L3 construct, it's possible that they actually do more than just one resource if you create the construct. So it could be that they also add IAM permissions and stuff like this. So for me, I was not interested in that. I just use L1 constructs, and the cool thing is that the properties are really the same and the semantics are the same than in the CloudFormation resource. The only difference that I mentioned is that, I mean, Pascal case becomes camel case. And also you probably have to change typings a little bit from YAML to the programming language that you use. In my case, I use JavaScript. But that's kind of straightforward to do. I don't use any of the functionality of, or like the, or say the additional functionality that the CDK provides. So, for example, I don't use custom constructs or stuff. I just use JavaScript code, JavaScript functions. And that's good enough for me. I understand what's going on, and there is no hidden stuff going on. We might change that in the future, but for this first step, where we really want to have a one-on-one migration, basically we want to avoid that our customers, when they update to the next version, have to replace lots of resources. So we have everything kept the same for this reason. So another benefit that we have from using the CDK now instead of the old approach is that we can build our JavaScript code that we use for Lambda functions inside the CDK. And all our Lambda functions are so-called inline functions. So this means the code is in the CloudFormation template. And the reason for that is that AWS Marketplace does not allow us to reach or basically fetch code from somewhere else than their systems, and their systems only support AMIs at the moment. So what we do is we use a small helper function, and I can share the link to that as well. Let me quickly copy that. And with that helper function, I basically trigger an ES build, and this returns the string of the code that I can then use as the inline code for my function. And that's very neat because I can do all kinds of things there, and I still end up with one JavaScript string that represents my code. So I can have many files in my code. I can reuse stuff. I can have tests and all this thing, but still in the CloudFormation template at the end, it's just a string. So that's very cool. We are very happy with the result. And we are actually at the moment that, like this day and yesterday, I was doing more or less the same migration work for other parts of our code base. So we are moving more and more templates into the CDK approach that I described. Because we really benefit from the code sharing. So ensure that all the templates use the same kind of properties and stuff. And one kind of side note, so while I did the migration and while I did all the diving, I discovered a couple of things that were actually inconsistent between our templates. So now they are kind of in a better shape than before, which is cool. So I'm very happy with that, Andreas.
Yeah, that sounds cool, Michael. So I think the thing here really is the CloudFormation templates are really a very good vehicle, basically, to allow our customers to deploy our products to their accounts. And besides you having said what you're doing with the CDK, I like about the fact that at the end, it's that simple product of a CloudFormation template that we can ship to our customers, and they can very easily, with a few clicks, deploy that to their accounts. So I think it's really cool that we have a more advanced setup on our side, which allows us to do code sharing and use the CDK. But on the other side, what we generate is the plain CloudFormation template that our customers can use very easily without having to deal with the CDK or any other tools. Just go through the AWS Management Console and deploy the solution. My topic is also related to infrastructure as code, but now we are switching tools, and this is about Terraform. So, as you've probably heard of, Terraform has changed their license, so it is no longer open source, and this has impacts. So, last week, I thought about upgrading the Terraform version on my local machine to Terraform 1.6, which is the latest release from, I think, October the 4th or something. And the reason I wanted to do that is because there's a new cool feature in Terraform 1.6, which is Terraform Test. So you now can define infrastructure tests in basically for your Terraform code very easily. And I like the fact that this is now integrated into Terraform, and I don't need any other third-party tools to achieve that. But then I was, so when trying to upgrade basically to Terraform 1.6, I was running into some issues. The first thing is I was doing, like I typically do, a brew upgrade on my machine. So on macOS, Brew, Homebrew is basically a package manager for mostly open source software. But after doing that, the Terraform version was still 1.5 dot something. I think 5.5 is the last version with the old license. And so it took me a while to find a GitHub pull request with Homebrew. And the reason is that Homebrew is no longer shipping Terraform as a bottle. So that is basically how they ship all the open source software. So that's basically what Homebrew is known for. Instead, they now ship Terraform as the so-called from tap. So that means this is a way how they ship third-party software. So yeah, the thing is now, if you have installed Terraform with Homebrew, you have basically to upgrade to the latest version, you have to install it from HashiCorp's tap instead of just using Brew install Terraform, which will ship you only the old version. So this was what I learned, and so I think you should be aware of that. If you're using Homebrew and Terraform to install Terraform, you should be aware of that. So if you want to get the latest version, you'd have to do brew install HashiCorp/tap/Terraform, which then gives you the 1.6 and then later the latest version of Terraform. So I found that out, so I now know how to install Terraform 1.6 on my machine. That's fine, yay. But then the next thing that came to my mind is, is it really a good idea to upgrade my Terraform code base and everything to Terraform 1.6? Because the thing is a little bit, if you plan to move to OpenTofu, which is the open source fork of Terraform, then the issue is that OpenTofu says it will be a drop-in replacement for Terraform compatible with all versions 1.5.x. So if you do upgrade to version 1.6 now, you might run into hopefully only small issues, but maybe in some issues when upgrading to OpenTofu later. So that is why I'm at the moment a little bit hesitant to upgrade to Terraform 1.6. I want it because I want to use Terraform test as a production ready feature, but I think it maybe might make sense to stick with Terraform 1.5 for a little while to see how the whole thing with OpenTofu evolves and if you want to switch to that or not, to find that out. So that is the current situation with Terraform. So for me as a developer, a lot of troubles caused by HashiCorp switching the license, which annoys me. But yeah, so I think that's the current situation that we are in with Terraform.
Yeah, I see. So I definitely wait until the things settled a little bit with the update. So Andreas, I have one more topic that we can talk about, and this is actually good news for us as well. So yesterday I deleted our Jenkins infrastructure that was running since the beginning of our company and our journey. And we had a lot of stuff shifted to GitHub Actions. I think, I don't know if it was last year or the year before. So we had already a lot of things running on GitHub Actions, but there was still some, like the older projects and stuff that we're running on Jenkins. So we hadn't spent time on migrating them to GitHub Actions. So basically what I did last week and also the beginning of this week is to take all the remaining jobs in Jenkins and convert them or migrate them to GitHub Actions. And this is basically, it's quite straightforward, at least for us. So what we had, for example, is our CloudFormation templates, our open source CloudFormation templates. I can share the link. Let me quickly look up the link. They were still running on Jenkins. And if I say running, then I mean the acceptance tests as well as the release stuff. So when a new Git tag was added and things like that, it was all done by Jenkins to then copy to an S3 bucket. So this is now in GitHub Actions, and you can see the workflows in the .github folder there. So it works quite nice. I'm happy The only challenge that I was running into, and this is not really related to, or it's kind of related to GitHub Actions, is that if you use Jenkins, you kind of see or get a nice visualization of, for example, JUnit test results by kind of default. So it just pops up in the Jenkins UI. And for GitHub Actions, that's not the case, right? So you don't see anything besides the logs. And so I'm looking for a way to get a nice-looking graphical overview of the tests and that failed, and then I can click into details and stuff. So I'm not 100% sure if I solved that, so I have to check that out, actually. We have solved that for Gradle. So we have BucketAV is running on Gradle, the tests at least, and for the AWS CF templates project, it still runs on Maven. So this is why it's a little bit different. So I'm still trying to figure that out, how it works, to get an HTML report. At the moment, I just get XML and some, I think, plain text files with the test results, which is, I mean, it's okay. You can figure out what went wrong, but it would be easier if you get just an HTML page and then click on the links and get all the data. So that's not yet completely done, but at least the Jenkins is removed, so we don't have the maintenance effort there anymore. So it really is some effort. So Jenkins releases new versions regularly. We so far updated them in our templates because the Jenkins setup itself is part of the AWS CF templates, but you also have to update all the plugins every time and things like that. So that's not needed anymore, Andreas. We are done with that. And of course, we run everything on our hyperends for GitHub Actions runner, right? So we don't use the GitHub runner, like the official or the included one that is maintained by GitHub, or run or kind of operated by GitHub, to be more precise. We use the one that is operated by us. So we still have something on our infrastructure where we run all the tests, but it is definitely now easier, and the whole Jenkins complexity is away. I'm very happy with that. So this is kind of a cleanup week. So I clean up all the YAML files, clean up all our infrastructure and stuff. So it's not really something our customers will notice in the short term, but we hope that in the long term it helps us to improve both our development speed and, of course, also the quality that we deliver. So, yeah, I hope it pays off, Andreas.
Hopefully. And by the way, it also reduces our AWS infrastructure costs.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
We are not have to run a Jenkins server 24/7.
Jenkins thing. And it was also exposed to the internet. So it also reduces our attack surface. So it's now basically gone. So we don't use any self-hosted stuff anymore that's public available. So we definitely have increased that or reduced that as well, which is cool, because, I mean, you never know. And Jenkins had a lot of, I mean, it could basically assume roles in most of our AWS infrastructure. So it's a critical piece of our whole security exposure. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Michael. Yeah, thanks for sharing. So I think then that's it. We will be back in 2 weeks. Subscribe to our newsletter, podcast, or the YouTube channel to make sure you're not missing the upcoming shows. We are also looking forward to your feedback. hello@cloudonaut.io, or find us on LinkedIn and Mastodon.
Yeah, Andreas, I was just... I just saw one comment in LinkedIn. Sorry to interrupt you. So there was some idea from Thomas to use TFEnv. So this is kind of a tool to install multiple versions of Terraform at the same time. You can have, I think, .tfEnv files or something in the folders, and then it will switch to the right version automatically. And that supports 1.6 as far as I understand. So that could also be an idea instead of using Homebrew to install Terraform. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think as far as I understand, or as far as I remember, I use it to install Terraform. And I think you can install TFEnv probably with Homebrew. So maybe you can kind of have both Homebrew and TFEnv. Yeah, so that could be working as well. And then, yeah, that's a nice little helper. So sorry for the interruption. Still, all the links will be in the show notes, right? And you can click or research the code examples and stuff that I talked about. And besides that, thank you very much for joining us this week, and have a great day.
Perfect. Bye.